Welcome to the Work the System podcast, where we help entrepreneurs make more and work less by managing their systems. And I'm your host, Josh Fonger. And today we have a special guest. We have Jeremy DeMerchant. Jeremy is a number one best-selling author, award-winning speaker, and the host of Sales Team Rescue on Headspace TV. Jeremy founded Permission to Sell Consulting Group after two decades of sales and leadership roles for industry giants in telecom, finance, and education. On a mission to help companies grow their sales success, Jeremy has had the opportunity to support small business owners, sales professionals, and entire sales teams from Santa Monica to Singapore to double their sales results in a matter of weeks. All right, Jeremy, so as we get started in this podcast, why don't you give us the background, the story? How did you become this sales expert?
You know, just recently I've started sharing a little bit more of this story, but when I was a young kid, I didn't get along with my peers, and I ended up just paying attention to what made adults impressed with me. And so kind of gave up on I was kind of a loner, but realized that if I could learn what made adults tick, my teachers, my parents, I could get a positive feedback from them. And as I turned 14, started working in a convenience store. And this one day, the scratch ticket came in, and it was a $1 scratch ticket, and it had a Dooley's logo on it, which is a Canadian billiards hall. And I was horribly unathletic. Mm-hmm. But pool was something I could do. I wasn't good at it, but I could do it. And so I saw this Dooley's scratch ticket and got really, really excited. And of course I was too young to buy it. Wink, wink. But when somebody came in, I said, "Hey, have you seen this?" And they ended up buying one. And the next person came in, I said, "Hey, have you seen this?" And they bought two. And it was a Saturday and Sunday shift. And over that time, I sold out of those tickets. And that's when I realized that if I can share my enthusiasm, I can influence somebody's buying decision. And from there, it kind of became a game. And I went through my career, started at a call center after that, and realized that if you're number one or number two on the phones, you don't get a chance to get off the phones because you're making the company too much money. But if you're number three, they'll let you jump off the phones if you can help other people do better. So I was number three, and I became a coach and then a team supervisor, and just got obsessed with helping other people get better at sales. And that just, it brought me so much joy. Like when that light bulb goes off and you kind of challenge somebody to try something they were scared to try and they do it and it works. It's just this huge aha moment in their mind. And when they light up and realize that one thing they just learned can be a great thing for the company, but in most cases means it's a great thing for their paychecks, they get very excited, and I reflect that.
Well, very cool. So it started early, and you had the insight about selling. I like that idea. Enthusiasm was kind of the first piece. And I think anyone can do that. Whether they have any techniques or not, they can at least show enthusiasm about what they sell.
Absolutely.
So since this is a podcast about systems, do you have kind of a normal way that you help companies with their selling? Is there a process or certain components to selling? And this is telephone selling mainly, right?
Telephone, video, face-to-face. I've worked with many different sales teams. At one point, I went side-by-side with a sales rep from an HVAC company, put on the little uniform and acted as if I was a trainee. And they just said, "Oh, this guy's new to the company, learning the business." Not incorrect. But I just sat there quiet, and then we'd get in the car and he'd say, "Okay, tell me what I could do better." And with that particular gentleman, we doubled his sales in 2 weeks. And so my superpower is actually not with systems. This is actually why you and I talk a lot, because I do need some of your help. But my superpower is listening to what's there and fixing it. Mm-hmm. I like there to be a foundation in place because I can move faster. I find it very challenging to build from the ground up because there's a lot of work that goes into it. There's a lot of testing, and it just feels like I can go 5 or 10 times faster when there's something in place. But one thing I can share from a systems perspective is I'm horrible at follow-up. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are. That's where the fortune is. If you can figure out how to keep following up with people, then and it takes something like 7 or 8 contacts before somebody decides to say yes to buy. And if you just give up after 2, which is what most people do, your sales will struggle. And so the system that I created, it's kind of wrapped up in a presentation called The 3 Ways to Avoid Getting Ghosted by Your Prospects. And the secret, it's not really mind-blowing, but there's a couple components to it. And one of it is, one of them is book the next call from the current call. Okay. I hated chasing people, emails, texts, calls that don't get answered. Couldn't stand it. But when I had them on the phone, I would do everything I could to make sure the next appointment is locked in. I'd make sure that I sent them the calendar invite. I'd make sure that it showed up in their calendar, made sure they clicked accept and they knew that I knew it so they wouldn't bail on me. And that was the biggest thing. And the second piece that really makes a big impact there is shorten the time frame between calls. The shorter you make it, the more the enthusiasm stays high. And we talked about enthusiasm sells. Well, when somebody's ready to buy, they're enthusiastic about something, either making money or saving money or whatever the solution is you're providing for them. And the higher you can keep that enthusiasm, the easier that sale is. And so those are kind of the key pieces. And it's not just for follow-up, it's for the entire sales cycle. But if you can keep it tight and continually keep them moving forward, it's really, really valuable. And just as an example, this is me going back a little while now, but there was one lady I dated and I couldn't tell if she liked me. And so after each date, I just said, want to go out again tomorrow? And I still, we ended up on, I think it was 28 dates in 30 days. And then finally I figured out she actually liked me, but I wasn't going to assume the no. I just kept asking. And then we ended up dating for, I don't know, 9 months or something like that. So but it was sort of a test. And it was a good example of why you shouldn't assume the worst case scenario. So that mindset is so, so powerful. And if you go in, and I don't know where what I'm about to say came from. It's not my original idea, but there's two mindsets when it comes to thinking about how people think. And one is a green light mindset, which gives you permission to continue, and a red light mindset, which gets you to stop. And you're the one that decides what it is because you're assuming what somebody's thinking and what's going on in their life when you're following up. So I challenge you to think about which one's going to serve you and your prospects more. You assuming they don't want to talk to you? Or are you not stopping until you know they don't?
That's all really good advice. I'm taking some notes from my sales team. So you mentioned something in the beginning, which I want to explore a little bit. So which is you listen for things. So you know, we record what our sales team does. What do you listen for in a sales conversation to find out what's wrong or right? Or is it more instinctual, or are there certain things that you listen for in the beginning and then something in the middle and then the transition and then the, you know, are there certain pieces you look for?
So I used to think it was instinctual. And I think it started that way. But when I realized that I could just push pause on a recording and the rep listening would go, oh, I messed that up there, I knew it was something that could be taught. And what happens is, first I listen to the energy. Like I start each call off with, how are you today? And so if you're in old school sales and in the call center, they say, don't do that. Just dive in and start pitching. But I want to know where somebody's at, where their energy's at. And so if they're, let's just say like a level one energy and I come in at like a level five, cause I'm not listening, there's going to be a huge disconnect. Mm-hmm. But if they're at a level two, I want to come in at like a 2.2. Like if I say, you know, Josh, how you doing today? And you say, I'm good. I'm like, great. And I'm going to come just a touch above. And gradually what'll happen in the conversation, and I'm actually realizing now more so than ever how much of this is about energy, the energy and enthusiasm starts to rise to match yours. And then you go up a little more and then a little more. And what happens is by the end of the conversation, if they started here at like a level one and they ended at a level 10 of enthusiasm, it doesn't matter what you talked about, they're going to associate that increase in energy with their experience with you. And suddenly they like you. And that is tough to make go away. So that's the first part, is like, how do you build that connection? One of the other pieces is, are you listening? A lot of people learn traditional styles of active listening, but they think that means going, mm-hmm, right, mm-hmm, when somebody's talking. And if you were in person or on video, the body language of nodding or acknowledging is really important. But if you're over the phone or over a virtual connection like this, what happens is when I say, mm-hmm, a lot of software will actually cut your voice off. And suddenly it sounds like, and it feels like they're being interrupted. And so it feels like you're prioritizing your need to be just on active listening. Mm-hmm, yep, yep. When really what happens is you're creating more of a conflict or like a wedge in the rapport that's built. So it's really the flow.
Interesting. So the flow, so you build the rapport, you have the flow, you're, I don't know, mirroring their energy, trying to bring them up a little bit. And then are there certain techniques or tactics that are essential after you've asked all the questions and you've kind of determined that they really have a need for your product or service, and you really have determined that you really are a good fit, then how do you go into the, this is some of what our sales team is challenged with, is actually getting them to make a decision to purchase, as opposed to then say, this sounds great, I definitely need to think about purchasing this someday, maybe in the future. How do you get over that chasm?
So I kind of cheat, or at least I consider it a cheat, because I get them to sell themselves. So I go through a process I call the 5 C's of successful sales conversations. And if you want, we can share that. But ultimately, what happens is you build the rapport, and then you find out like where they want to be 5 years from now, and what that looks like if they don't do anything versus what it looks like if they do something to solve the current problem. And then I say, on a scale from 1 to 10, how important is it for you to have that second version with the problem fixed be your reality? And I use that number to guide my conversation. So if they say 8, 9, or 10, we're rolling. Okay. There might be a little objection, but at least you're on the right path. If they're, 5 or below, you're way off track. You have not found the problem and you got to start over. But when you're going and identifying that, they say, oh, you know what? It's 10. I said, great. What questions do you have? And I haven't talked about a product or a solution. I just talk about having the problem solved, because people don't care what's in the box. They just want the problem solved. And so if you put them in a place where, oh, well, this guy can solve my problem. And yeah, 10 out of 10, I want it solved. I said, great, what questions do you have? And then they're going to say, oh, well, what exactly is it? Or what price is it? Things like that. And that's great, because I want all that to come up. And I try to get it out as much as possible before I ask for the sale. And so like another relationship kind of parallel here is, don't pop the question before you're pretty sure she's going to say yes. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's the same way for me. Some people say always be closing. I say always be doing temperature checks to make sure, you know, you guys are on the same page, but you're not closing per se. I want to be there and feel that energetically we're aligned. We're in agreement that this is going to solve the problem. Then I'm going to say, what other questions do you have? Oh, concerned about price. Great. Well, this is the investment. What other questions do you have? And I will continue to say the exact same line. Great. What other questions do you have? And overcome the objections with 1 or 2 lines max until they say, I think that's it. I said, great. Are you ready to start to make version number 2, whatever that outcome was, your reality? Yeah. Great. The next step is, and that's it. I never have to say, are you ready to buy? Because again, that's the box. They don't care, right? They want the result. We need to stop selling products and start solving problems. And it's not only an activity or process, it's the mindset going into the sales call too.
So really it's, what is the next step? And then they want to know the next step. You tell them the next step. And then eventually the next step is hitting the buy button, but you don't call it buy. Okay.
No, I would say, you know, the next step is we process your payment. I can do Visa, MasterCard, or we can do PayPal or whatever, right? Or wire transfer. Once that's through, then we schedule your initial meeting so we can get the momentum started so you can hit the ground running. So even at the end of that conversation, they're excited. They know they got to pay first, but they're pumped because they're going to hit the ground running.
Okay. And they're is that pretty important? The right before the close and then right after the close, explaining to them what it's going to be like?
Okay. 100%. And the biggest reason is we have this icky little thing in the sales world that's called buyer's remorse. Mm-hmm. And that's what happens when somebody buys emotionally in the moment, but can't justify it logically, which is how we buy. Mm-hmm. But if you can continue the momentum and throw in the supporting logic that aligns with what they want to achieve, like let's just say somebody was going to, well, join your program. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, if they're like, yeah, I'm going to buy, great. They pay. Awesome. Thanks. Oh, I don't know what happens next. I'm starting to have doubts. Oh, that sales guy, Josh, I feel like he might've pulled one over on me. And you can see my body language changing too as we go. And that's what happens emotionally to them. But if you say the next step is you're going to get a link in your email within 5 to 10 minutes, click that, make sure you can get access to the portal. We're going to give you a walkthrough. If it doesn't work, I'm going to reach out to you directly to make sure you're covered because we got you. Right. Yeah. Sales at its simplest level is somebody wants to feel like someone else says, I got you. That's it. I've got a problem. I'm bearing my soul to you. And I want to feel like you got me covered. And if you can keep that in mind through all the process design, through all the conversation, just know somebody wants to be supported. Then sales doesn't become a challenge. It just becomes you helping people solve problems. And it feels great.
Well, let me get to some of the tactical issues that, sure, that I think some people on our list are probably interested in. One would be, as an owner, when should you, as the owner, stop selling and transition this off to somebody else in your business? Is a certain size of business, certain complexity of business? Because I find it hard a lot of times for owners to give this up because they know all the products, they know all the players, they know all the vendors, they all know all the different angles that they can cut and corners they can cut. So how does that transition work, or when should that happen?
That's a really good question, and it's a very challenging one. So it depends on what the why is behind the transition. So if the owner, will always be able to sell better than their reps for the first 2 months or so, because it's what a friend of mine named Jeremy Pope calls founder's fuel. You've got 20 plus years in your industry. You can answer any question that gets thrown at you, and you've never written a darn thing down about it. And so there's no way for that information in your head to get into your sales rep's head. And so they're not going to be as smooth. They're not going to be as confident. And so understanding that gap is really, really important. But the key piece is you need to be able to pass some type of system on. Like if you've done a few sales calls and you've closed sales and you're like, hey, I want to pass it off to the sales team, you're premature. You need to be able to have something you know works. And it can't just work with your, you know, with your close friends, people that have know you, like you, and trust you and have done so for 20 years, because they're going to have a different level of authority, and chances are your circle is going to run out. So you want to go get clients outside of that or customers outside that. You need to have a sales process that works for you selling to people that don't already know you. And when you can structure that, and you don't have to have it, you know, all scripted necessarily. But one of the things that I ask for when I work with the team is, what recordings do you have of existing calls? Because the same way that I want to come in and work with an existing system and just make it better, that's how reps want to feel too. They don't want to come on board and say, I'm going to build it from the ground up. That's heavy. And in the world where a lot of us are selling remote, and the idea of a commission-only sales team is really, really attractive right now, one thing that we forget is we need to help those reps create momentum, because their energy needs to stay up. Mm-hmm. They want leads, they want support, and they want to feel like they're not left out on this island to sell this product that they kind of know something about, right? They need to feel like they are part of the family. And until you have the pieces to effectively support them, you're not ready. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. So what about setters and closers? What's your feeling on somebody taking it from start to finish in the relationship versus, I mean, when should a company make a choice about that?
It really depends on how complex your sales process is. There's some like high-end, high-ticket sales. You are going to be hard-pressed to get somebody selling high-ticket to spend time booking appointments and doing lead generation. They're two very different skill sets. One's not better than the other, although typically closing high ticket sales pays better than being an appointment setter. But there's some people that will happily sit back and send messages on LinkedIn or do calls. And if you pay them effectively, and when I say effectively, I mean in a way that rewards the behavior you want. So I always recommend being paid based on appointments booked that show. Okay. Because that's the activity you want. You don't want to say, I'm going to pay you based on what you book. Cause they're like, you know, just put it on the calendar. Cause we're human, right? Not that anyone wants to get out and like try to work the system. Well, I guess everybody wants to work the system, I guess. Right. But in a positive way, I'm going to dig myself a hole with the book here. But I think that the key piece is understanding that people want to maximize the systems that are built around them, and they want to gamify them as much as they can, and they want to maximize their returns. So if you make it easy for them to give data or give results to your company that aren't aligned with the end result that you want, then it's just not going to work out. But if you're super particular, like, yes, we want appointments booked, but if they don't show, it's really tough. So let's say, you know what, they're responsible to shoot a reminder message or a follow-up message or something to make sure the person shows up. And when they show, they get paid. So that's kind of a key piece for me when I'm looking at that scenario. There are some people that'll go end to end, but typically where I found that's really successful is if somebody has a very specific lead generation strategy and you want them to keep the relationship going, but you're not worried about volume, because it takes time to shift your mindset from doing lead gen to doing a sales conversation to doing support after the sale. They're very different thought processes. And if you want to move at scale, you want to have people that are focused in their area of genius. And there's not very many people that are genius at appointment setting, at big ticket sales closing, at being an account manager and providing the ongoing support, or even just customer service, right? They're all very different skill sets that are all vitally important. And as business owners, we tend to put the priority on getting that sale closed is where we tend to pay the most, because that's when we get paid.
So what about, and you mentioned this a little bit, what is the difference now because of the pandemic we've been through or still going through? What is the difference now with selling compared to how it was 6 months ago? Is it different at all? I mean, obviously it's more over the virtual now, or is it the same?
I think it is different, but the biggest difference is in people's minds. So I'm still in the same spot I was 12 months ago selling. I'm behind a camera, right? But that's the world that we live in. But what I've noticed, and it's interesting, this is one of the first interviews I've done without a tie on since the pandemic started, because I thought it would be fun when I realized everybody else was showing up in t-shirts on all these live videos. And I'm like, really? Like, you wouldn't show up to a business meeting in a t-shirt. Why is it okay? Because you're at home. So I started putting a tie on as much as I could. Almost every episode of Sales Team Rescue that's filmed live from the start of the pandemic until now, almost all of them I'm wearing a tie, and I would try to go through my tie collection that I haven't touched in 4 years just to stand out, because it was easy. But it's like we're slacking off a little bit on our presentation. And this is where we need to be even more on our game, because people want to feel more support. A lot of people are having a tough time. And again, back to the comment earlier about they want to feel like, you know, someone's got them. And if you're going, you know what, Josh, yeah, you know, I get it. I know it's tough. You want to build your sales team. Like, you don't feel that connection, right? It doesn't feel like I'm serious. I feel like I'm naked now with this button undone. See? So like, there's a level of professionalism that builds confidence. And I think as sales professionals, we need to up our game. And I just button my headset into my shirt there. Look at this. This is the first episode you've ever had somebody have to half strip. this will go viral now. But this is the biggest difference. Like, people are now in a more comfortable setting. So it's easier for them to get more comfortable. That actually makes sales easier, because they're already in a state of comfort. So it's easier to build rapport. What is actually more difficult, though, is that if your sales approach or the product you're selling requires somebody to feel some discomfort in order to go, you know what, you're right. If I don't fix this, my business is going to be hurting. Or if I don't fix this, I might have the money for my daughter to go to school or whatever. If you need to make them feel uncomfortable, it's a lot harder now, because they're sitting back in their comfy chair, and it's probably a gaming chair that's designed for someone to lay back on it for 12 hours at a time. You need to, like, and if you can engage them, this is why I like, I'm turning video on. I was at a call earlier today and the guy jumped on and he didn't turn his video on. I said, I'm going to turn mine on and be cool to meet you. And then he turned his on, and suddenly I saw him go, oh yeah. And he stood up straighter. And it's not about posture, but it's about how engaged somebody is in the conversation, right? And this is actually why I like the video sometimes better than phone, because someone can have a phone conversation pretty passively while they're driving down the road. But you can't be passive when you've got somebody video to video. And it has that same impact as if you were in a boardroom across the table from them. And that's, I think, where the power comes in to create that impact.
No, I think that's really interesting. I never thought about it that way. I tend to avoid video when I don't have to, but now that you're talking to me, I'm like, okay, probably good to do more video. Well, Jeremy, I could be talking to you all day because I've got tons of sales questions, but I do respect your time, and I know you've got to run to another meeting. So let's wrap up with this. What's one question I forgot to ask you about, but I should have asked you, that you think would be important for our audience to hear about?
I think one of the biggest challenges that a lot of business owners struggle with is around pricing. And they think, especially if they're earlier on in testing what they're offering, and especially in the coaching space, but also in small business space, there's this feeling that if I ask for too much, someone's not going to get the value. And I believe it's just the opposite. I believe, and this is a quote that started from a coach of mine that I had a long time ago, but the level of investment when it comes to something that's transformational, where somebody has to participate, okay, not a done for you, but when somebody has to participate, the level of investment is directly correlated to the level of commitment they have to achieving the results. And to kind of lay that out a little further, if somebody, like if I said, Josh, give me $1,000, I'm going to go and triple your sales team size. You're like, all right, sure. And not that you wouldn't be engaged and excited about it, but in your mind, $1,000 isn't a big deal. But if I said, Josh, I'm going to go triple the size of your sales team, your investment's going to be $300,000. You're going to go, oh. And then if I get you to a yes, suddenly you're not going back saying, well, let's see what Jeremy does. You're going to go, all right, well, what's next? What's next? What's next? And you're going to be so engaged because you've got something riding on it. Right. And that's where I want to challenge people listening and watching. Now, I'm not saying necessarily change your pricing models because there's a lot more business logistics around that. But if it's a mindset challenge and you're convincing yourself that you should drop your price because your product or service isn't selling, don't make that decision based on your emotion. Do it based on testing. And I would challenge you first to increase your price and see what happens. Because I would bet you're actually going to sell more.
And once they do buy, they'll get more transformative results too, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Now that's really great advice. Good way to end this. Jeremy, where can people find out more about you and your business?
Well, my main site is permissiontosell.com, but Sales Team Rescue, which is my weekly Facebook live show that you mentioned, just went live on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, all those things on as a real podcast, as I call it. So you can go to salesteamrescue.com. And learn more about that. Listen to episodes and listen to total rock stars when it comes to increasing your sales, growing your sales team, lead generation, email writing. I've got experts that cover all these areas that are even outside the scope of what I do, so that this show can be your number one source for sales leaders and people that want to build sales teams.
All right. So that's Sales Team Rescue. And then the website is Permission to Sell, right?
Yeah, permissiontosell.com is the main website and salesteamrescue.com is the podcast site.
Okay. Awesome, Jeremy. I'll be checking it out and I'll be sending my sales team there. Appreciate you being here this Friday afternoon and appreciate everyone else coming join us live here on Facebook. If you want to check out the podcast, any previous podcasts, you can go to our Facebook page or our YouTube page or anywhere you listen to podcasts or watch them, you can find us there. And if you want a copy of that book right there behind you, workthesystem.com. You can get it for free at our website at workthesystem.com, or you can give us a review, leave us a review. And then we pick out one review out of a hat once a week. And then we mail out a copy of that book. Just send us a screenshot and say, here's a review. And then we will grab a name and we'll mail it right to your house. Otherwise, thanks again, Jeremy. And we'll see you next week.